Hi, everyone, and welcome to Oscar Wilde, a podcast about film, always counting down to next year's Oscars. I'm Sophia Simonello.
And I'm Nick Rocro.
And today we have a spooky season, Halloween-themed episode. We will be talking all about The Omen from 1976. Believe it or not, this did win an Oscar. So I'm excited to talk about that, especially because we love horror movies, but they're usually overlooked by the Oscars. So anytime one is somehow recognized, whether that's in an acting category or makeup and hairstyling, and in this case with the music, it's always fun to talk about.
Yeah, I agree. And with the first Omen coming out earlier this year, that was a fun prequel and really just sets up this movie right from the get-go. And I wasn't sure if I'd seen this before, and it is the case that this was my first time watching it, so that was fun.
Good.
I know you were curious about that, but it launched a franchise just like many horror classics that we love, and I don't know if I will dabble in those sequels, or I wonder if you've seen, how many of the sequels have you seen?
So it's funny because I actually, I've avoided them because I tend to not love as many horror sequels. Like I'm actually pretty bad at keeping up with horror franchises. I really will just watch the core, like, first entry and then won't dabble into any of the others. That's really like how I was with the exception of Halloween, I would say. But like Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, The Omen, I really just stick to the first one. Maybe that can change. But I remember also just hearing that a lot of them were not good. Damien, Omen 2, Omen 4, The Awakening. I will say I did watch the first Omen this past year and did actually really like a lot of the visuals in particular and some of the directorial decisions from Arkasha Stevenson, who I think is a really promising horror director. But what happens with these, and did you see the first Omen?
Yeah, I liked that one.
So what did you think of the ending of that? Because it connects in a very silly way back to The Omen, which took me fully out of it. I wanted it to, I think if the first Omen were removed from the franchise, like if she were just, for example, able to make an Antichrist movie, I think it would have been a lot better than it having to. And I don't want to spoil it just in case listeners haven't seen it, but I think the way that it connects back to the first one is very silly.
Yeah, I guess since I saw them in reverse order, I don't know. It works in a prequel standpoint. I will say that. But I get why you think it's silly.
Okay. Yeah. That's funny, though, if you actually watch them, like, not in the order that they were made, but in chronological timeline order. That's so interesting. And then I saw the remake of The Omen in 2006, which I thought was very bad, with Julia Stiles. I remember seeing that and just thinking, okay, there is a really scary scene with a syringe I remember not liking, but I have not revisited it since I first saw it in 2006. But I have returned to The Omen. It is one I watch, if not every year, every other year. I do watch it quite often.
I think before we get too far into it, let's go over the intro for the film. So, description: immediately after their miscarriage, the U.S. diplomat Robert Thorne adopts the newborn Damien without the knowledge of his wife. Yet what he doesn't know is that their new son is the son of the devil. This was directed by Richard Donner. It stars Gregory Peck, Lee Remick, Harvey Spencer Stevens, David Warner, Billy Whitelaw, and more. Like you said, this won an Oscar for Best Original Score for Jerry Goldsmith and was nominated for Original Song for the song titled Ave Satani. And I love those two mentions. I think those are two great aspects in the film that heighten its scarier scenes and moments. The song in particular, I think they use phenomenally throughout. But I also loved other parts of the movie. I thought it was a little silly at times and maybe disjointed. I think the pacing is weird. But I did enjoy it overall, I will say. It really has that 70s feel, just of movies in general from that decade, like with the camera work and some of its ideas of voyeurism, or we can get into how Damien comes to be. But I think overall, despite like the mixed critic reviews at the time, I think it does hold up as something you could rewatch.
Yeah, it's funny. I think it's great that we're having this conversation now where you just watched it for the first time. And I saw this movie for the first time when I was maybe 9, like 8 or 9, really young. And this was one that really traumatized me, but only certain aspects. It was way worse for my sister in the same way that she was afraid of Margaret White. If I ever wanted to scare her and be a mean older sibling, I would say, it's all for you, Damien. Because she hated that part so much with Nanny Holly. But yeah, it's one that I think is on rewatch, really successful in certain aspects. There are a few, I think, really creative, nasty kills that happen really early on. But I think you're right about the pacing, that I think we have so many good moments early on in the film, like the one with Nanny Holly at the birthday party that we can talk about, or Damien going to church, or Damien at the petting zoo. Like, those are, I think, when I think of the movie, the iconic moments that I remember. But then as we get into this second act where Thorne and Jennings are on this expedition, this quest to find out more information, and it becomes just a lot of them researching, I lose a lot of interest in that. And I think I like it much better when the family is together at the beginning and Damien is just up to no good and all hell is breaking loose. Mm-hmm. Because I think it does really slow it down. And the tone, I think, becomes a bit more imbalanced, where early, I think you do get into the weirdness and the strangeness of Satan and the devil. But you also, I think it also is very self-serious at times too. And that's when I like it the least. So it's a mixed bag for me, but also one that I really do look at fondly just because I grew up with it and it is a staple of my horror movie rotation.
Yeah, it's just that the movie starts in Rome on June 6th and we end up in London, and then we come back to Rome, and then we're driving around the Italian countryside, and then we come back to London. It's just like we kind of go all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a road movie for that time when Thorne and Jennings are going to the cemetery and the old hospital. So I was just like, where are we going? We still had like 40 minutes left in the movie. I'm like, also, they go to Israel in that time. We jump between places like it's nothing, like immediately. But then these scenes are really drawn out in a very 70s fashion, I will say, which isn't a bad thing. It just, I think, made the movie feel a little long in the end, even though it's 100 minutes. I did love the beginning. I think it's insane that they think a woman could have a baby, not realize it didn't survive, or what we were meant to believe, and then replace it with an entirely different baby right after she has had birth. It's like, wait, do they really think this could happen? I was so confused in those first couple minutes. But I will say, the line when the priest says, if I may suggest, it even resembles, was just so eerie and manipulative. Mm-hmm. And disgusting. But we have this great shot, one of the first and many great shots by the cinematographer Gil Taylor, of mirrors and reflections of the priest and this couple and this baby. So I, of all the things in the movie, really love the blocking and the camera work.
Mm-hmm. There are some great split diopter shots. Mm-hmm. Later on. Oh, too.
Yeah.
I love the camera work. But yeah, I mean, early in the movie, you do have to suspend your disbelief a little bit, but I don't even think about the science of it as much as I think about how angry I am at him for meddling and not just telling the truth. Because later on in the movie, like, she is having so many problems with this child that when she does get pregnant again, she wants an abortion. Like, he created this horrible situation for her by bringing this demon child into it. And it's why he's one of my least favorite men in horror movies. We can also, I have a question for you about that later on, but I have always disliked this character, Robert Thorne, even though He's played by Gregory Peck, who I do love. But I think that's a really smart choice of bringing someone like him into this role, because I do find him, on the surface at least, trustworthy, right? He's Atticus Finch. And when we think about previous films when he's in Rome, Roman Holiday, like there is something there in his history as an actor that I think really works for this sort of deceitful man. Mm-hmm. And it's not that he is, you know, outwardly evil or deceptive in the same way that someone like Guy Woodhouse is in Rosemary's Baby, but there is something that is just so awful about him. And I think him being a diplomat too is also part of that, like having this really high powered job and just meddling, thinking he can control things.
Mm-hmm.
It's a frustrating thing that obviously, like, it comes back to get him later on because of what he decided to do. But yeah, that line is great, especially referring to Damien as it early.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's scary. And in the 70s too, I think the devil was really big in horror movies. And this connects really well with that. I think in the 70s and really anything post Rosemary's Baby, we're looking at quite a few horror movies that deal with the devil, that also deal with, I love the demon child trope, or like a horror movie where you can't trust the kid. I think that that always is a really fun horror trope. But yeah, it's what's also interesting with this is that Carrie came out the same year. And that I actually do find to be a much more effective exploration of faith and supernatural elements than The Omen. Even though I do like both, but Carrie, I think, is just far more successful in the fear that it induces and the exploration of its themes.
I'll have to think about that because I might agree, but I think that comes back to the film script needing some improvement, and I think feeling just off kilter. Part of this isn't due to the priest character and how he approaches Robert Thorne. He is just delusional and screaming at him in Bible verses. And I mean, I would act the same way if I were Robert. I'd be like, get out of my office. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
Security guard.
Yeah.
But it's his ideas of like, he could have just said, you know, your son was switched out at birth. He is the Antichrist. Like, there's no explaining going on.
Yeah, make it a little clearer.
And I get it's the trope and the slow burn of it all, but he has very poor communication skills, and that kind of just enraged my viewing because he eventually gets it. But even when we're in the park later on and the priest is like, your wife is in danger, it's like, okay, light bulb goes off. But then he starts viewing these verses again. It's like, you're not getting anywhere. You want him to go to Israel? Like, are you serious? It was just a little frustrating. But maybe that's my thing that maybe you had trouble with too, or were there other reasons?
Well, it's funny because on one hand, you get why that has to happen for a horror movie, because they want that reveal later on when they go into the priest's room and they see that horrifying scene of all of the papers plastered all over the wall, all of the crosses. Like, he and Margaret White would get along. But he has this like entire folder basically of clippings about Robert Thorne and these astrological events. And it's like, and you think, just bring the file, just give him the file. That's all you need. But I don't know. I think it is just a way to drag it along and make everything a bit more dramatic, especially in that reveal. But I do like, I will say, when you think about maybe the build up to the first act, I like how everything is going well at first. Like, we have this montage of them together as a young family and everything seems okay. And we don't really think that, like, nothing is wrong. Like, it's almost like it takes the devil a little bit of time to start working. Like, he has to be a little bit older before he really gets going. But I think the birthday party really is the most horrifying scene in the movie, where Nanny Holly just stands up at the window of their house in front of all of their guests, this like very extravagant, lavish birthday party, and starts yelling, "It's all for you, Damien." And in this terrifying voice that stays with you, and then hangs herself. What did you think of that scene? Because that was your first time watching it. And this is always the scariest moment in the movie, I think, for me.
I think it's our first jump scare that we get too. I think you're just taken aback because it happened so quickly. There's like a cut from a dog to Damien to her immediately on top of the house. And it's like, what just happened? And then you see the rope and you're like, oh my God. So at this point, you're putting two and two together that not only are dogs bad, apparently, or they're possessed, but Damien, there's something going on that's not right. And that was just really spooky. And again, I don't know, some of the reaction shots of just like everyone staring were a little comical. It's realizing that everyone just saw this. You know, they have the mime also. There's a shot of him.
Yeah.
But yeah, just really spooky. I agree.
Yeah, it's one of the best moments in the movie, if not the best. I just always think, like, how do you recover from this? If you are a child attending this birthday party, you need intense therapy for a long time. And the shot of her just like in the background, even hanging there, like her body hanging there, is too much. But I do love her hair and makeup. I'll say that. It's like very fun, light 70s. And then I think that's really when we also are really introduced to these two other characters. The priest comes in a bit later, right after that. But then also we get Jennings, the photographer, who I also love because I'm just obsessed with David Warner's haircut. It's like very Beatlemania and so British from that time. I love it. I feel like he's just such a perfect character for that time period. And the look for the role is exactly right. Mm-hmm. And I love that he's just around documenting, right? Taking pictures. And then what's revealed from the pictures are these lines that show exactly how each person in the photo is later going to be killed based on their association with Damien. So like with the nanny, she had what looked like a rope around her neck. And then the priest, which we can also talk about his death and how great that is. He has this line going diagonally into his body up to the top corner of the photo. And I think that's a really clever reveal too. That's really spooky.
I love that it's setting us up for, I would say, like act two of the movie, or what our next goal is to be in the film.
Mm-hmm.
And the first two happen pretty quickly. And then we're waiting on the photographer for a long time. We're like, okay, is this it? Or at least I was watching. It's like, okay, this is kind of a spooky scene. This could be it. And then it's not. And that keeps going for a while. But no, I love this little thing because he's always taking pictures of the priest. And I think as a viewer, you're hoping that he puts two and two together quicker than he does. But it's also interesting because these relationships of him seeing the priest, but then the priest and Robert, and then later Robert and the photographer, they're all separate. So no one really knows each other. And I think that's part of the build that works for me too.
Mm-hmm.
The priest's death, though, there's a big storm happening and you're like, okay, where is this line coming from? What is it going to be? And they cut to the top of the church. There's a spire that comes loose and just falls right through him, which is really spooky. But the sound effect took me out. It was just
it's like
the lightest thud. It was literally just thuds into the ground. You're like, oh, okay. There's like no violent, gruesome.
Yeah, there's no like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No sound effect with it coming into contact like with the body and the organs.
Just
it's just
body.
Like thud hit the ground. Yeah. Look. So I have always been afraid of impaling. It's a really horrible idea. Like when I think about it, I remember learning about it in history class probably. Well, actually, this was probably the first time I'd ever really learned about someone being impaled was in The Omen. But, you know, later, like Vlad the Impaler and thinking about it being this like way of death in medieval times, it always scared me. I think it's like one of the worst, worst possible things. So this one's really rough for me. But I like the way it's choreographed too, like with all the leaves blowing, the weather's changing, the fire, how he's trying to get into the church, but he can't get in. Like, this is the place of sanctuary. And then something from the architecture of the church is what ends up killing him. Yeah. I think that that's a really good detail.
We get some beautiful shots before this, like in the little forest or field. There's a crane shot where the camera comes up behind the tree and the tree trunks like frame the priest while the storm is happening. That's beautiful. And the other part I think that really works with increasing the intensity is the song Ave Satani. This is where we first hear it. And it just immediately puts you on edge. You kind of hear it in the opening title sequence as well. But the choir aspect and being at this church, I think just totally works.
Yeah, I think so too. And I wanted to talk about some of Damien's early funny moments. The first when they're going to the wedding at the Episcopal Church. And this church, I will say, like, to Damien's credit, is pretty menacing. Like, they found a really good church, I think, to for a shooting location, because just the way that it's sitting on its own, like there's nothing around it, and it's this really, there's this really high tower, like it does look very imposing. So I think that it's believable that it would scare a child a little bit, or that it would be appear a bit menacing. But also I like the build up there, because then, you know, as he's just starting, he's staring the church down first in the top hat, and then which is so funny, and then he's very convincing in his fear, and then having the tantrum. He reminded me, you haven't watched early Real Housewives of New York,
No.
He reminds me so much of Francois and Johan, who were Alex and Simon's demon children, who would throw tantrums at restaurants all the time, and their parents would do nothing. He reminds me of them in the moment, just like thrashing, screaming. And then that's it. He gets his way and they just leave. I love when the guy who's working outside, who opens the door, like the valet, he just shuts it and they drive away. It's like, I'm not dealing with you.
Damien having the fit is crazy. And it's the mom being like, oh my God, there's something wrong with him. He's like shaking in fear.
Yeah.
And the funny part afterwards is when she's like fixing herself and putting makeup on in the mirror. And they're like, oh, it's only a few bruises. I'm like, you got bruises from your kid having a fit in a car?
Yeah.
Like, this is not normal.
No.
And it's like all over her face. It's just like, when are you guys going to realize something or do something? More so Robert, because people have clued him in at this point, and not so much her. But there is a moment, and it's funny that we don't hear it from her, but someone else says, like, she doesn't think that Damien is her child. And that really spooked me too. It's like, she knows, because she is a mother, and how that comes back is just so messed up in the end. But there are just so many clues along the way that are like, do something about it.
Yeah. And then the other crazy part that makes no sense to me in this movie is when Mrs. Baylock randomly shows up. She's so scary and just says,
awful.
The agency sent me. And they do no investigation into this. They're just like, and she's like, take me to Damien. Where's your child? And they're just like, okay. Yeah, sure.
My friend was like, they're just going to let some random lady into the U.S. ambassador's house. Like, what? No background checks. No call to the agency, quote unquote agency. Like,
that's so funny. Like, what is the agency? It's so funny. She just has the dog there.
Oh my God, that dog. That I think is my favorite shot in the movie, though. There's a shot later when he comes back to the house during the finale, and the dog is just lurking walking down this long, dark hallway. Oh my God, it's so beautiful. But those dogs, yeah, they really do linger in the movie. We have the dog at their London house, and they're all Rottweilers, right?
Yeah, all Rottweilers.
And then we have, once Thorn and Jennings are in Italy, we're at this cemetery, and there are all these dogs too. And I'm assuming that those are the split diopter shots that you were referencing that I saw immediately. I was like, oh my God, perfect use. But those dogs too, those are scary. They're barking all the time. So it just like heightens the mood also.
Yeah, that is my favorite shot of the movie. The split diopter of Gregory Peck of Thorn in the cemetery, where you see him and you see the dog. It's so fun. It's a great use of split diopter. All of the cinematography in the movie, I think, is really smart and very beautiful. Like, it plays with that kind of misty English Gothic quality and the nature surrounding and the lines and angles of the house. I think I really, really like that. So, yeah, I love the cinematography so much. I wanted to ask you as well, do you have a favorite, I called it a Damien sass moment, where he does something bratty or sassy or gives a look? Do you have a favorite one?
Well,
because he makes me laugh so hard.
Yeah, he's funny. It's funny how also in the beginning we see like six different child actors. I'm like, okay. They cut together so much different footage of different Damiens, whatever. But I don't know if this is my favorite, because the smile at the very end is good too, but this is a scene I want to talk about, and it's when he rides the tricycle into the mother. But it's this great buildup. Again, we have Mrs. Baylock watching him tricycle in a circle. Like, he's like building energy somehow, like kinetic energy.
He's like revving up.
Yeah. It's so sinister how she's watching him too, and how they shoot that. And then she opens the door like, okay, go now. Go ride your bike. But this reminded me of Danny from The Shining 2, of him on his tricycle riding in circles over and over. But up to this point, Catherine is trying to fix the plants that are hanging. And she stands on this table. She also puts the goldfish bowl on the ledge.
I know. Bad decisions all around.
No. Yeah.
Safety is not first for her.
And here comes Damien just ramming into the table and she falls over the ledge. She's hanging on. The goldfish bowl cracks and basically explodes when it falls. That shot is pretty. And then she falls. And so I thought she was dead. She has blood coming out of her nose or her mouth, which is just a reference to the baby dying. But I was like, she is fully, her arms are at different angles. The shot of that too, and her fall is somewhat gruesome. It's not super gory, but still just watching that happen. And then Damien just looks down and runs back to his room like, oops.
Yeah.
Sorry, mommy.
His face, too, when she's hanging there and he's just watching her. Not like he's strong enough to help her or anything like that, but he's just looking at her. He doesn't even try. He doesn't say anything. He doesn't scream. Like, he's just watching her about to fall.
It's crazy.
It's so crazy. My favorite Damien sass moment is when they're at the petting zoo, because, is this, like, safari that they're going on? Like, it's not really, it's, I think they call it a petting zoo, but it's not.
Not with those baboons.
No. When they're on the outdoor safari driving through, and he's egging the baboons on. His face is like, come here, like, get, you know, come to the car, like, I'll get you, like, taunting them. And it's so funny because it's the opposite of what happens in the church, where he's horrified and just being a little brat throwing the tantrum. Here he wants the baboons to attack the car, and his face is so funny in that moment.
And just having those baboons attack the car is a cool idea and thing to watch happen. Like, these are real animals. mm-hmm. something that wouldn't happen nowadays. But yeah, the idea of this is also just a menacing thought. You know something bad is going to happen once they're driving in there, but is important in showing Damien's power and just how evil he is. Yeah, him enjoying all of this.
Yeah. Oof. I also wanted to ask you which death you thought was the worst. There are a few we haven't talked about yet. I have a very clear one that we actually haven't mentioned yet that I think is the worst, which is when Jennings is cleanly beheaded by that piece of glass coming off the back of that truck.
Yeah. I was going to say, is it Jennings or Catherine? I think mine is Catherine.
Oh, when she flies out the window because of Mrs. Baylock. Mrs. Baylock was committed to her falling to her death. She's like, we tried once with the tricycle. We're going to try again.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to miss this time out the hospital window.
She does a full flip out the window, falling through the ambulance, crashing. And you just see her laying there. It's awful. I don't like Mrs. Baylock's death as much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. He's like fighting her. And it's like she keeps gnawing at your leg. Like, just do it already. Get rid of her because she's awful. From the beginning, we all knew that she was bad news.
Yeah.
But I did like Jennings' death. Once he bent over to get those knives, I was like, oh, it's over. And that glass coming out, that was really cool.
Yeah. So two things about this. Because I watched this movie when I was so young, and I find beheadings in general just so disturbing, like any decapitation in a horror movie, Hereditary, really anything. I just, it makes me feel sick. But every time, like when I'm driving and I'm behind some kind of like utility vehicle and there, I just always, I'm like, nope, gotta get around it. Mm-hmm. We're not having this happen. And I read, because with any horror movies about the devil, sometimes like weird stories will come up from the set. Like we had those from The Exorcist where weird things started happening. But mm-hmm. I wanted to read this because I thought this was really scary. I learned this through CBS News that John Richardson, who was a special effects artist who helped with the decapitation scene, he was in a car crash when they were in post-production. And his assistant, Liz Moore, who was in the passenger seat, was beheaded in the same way in the car crash.
That's
terrifying. Isn't that awful? And apparently, Richardson saw a sign near where the accident took place for a town called Omen that was 66.6 kilometers away.
Oh my God. No, I'm out.
Horrible.
That's spooky.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my utility vehicle scene is from Final Destination 2. Like that always scared me. Oh my God.
I don't know. I don't do those movies.
It's the same idea.
What was the one with the tanning bed? I've seen that one.
I don't remember. That might've been the first one.
Okay, that scarred me, and I haven't returned.
I mean, tanning bed, I think of, I still know what you did last summer, but that's a little different. But Final Destination 2 is when they're driving behind, I think it's tree trunks or poles, and they end up flying through the car window behind them. But same idea. It's like, no, thank you. I will be going around you.
Mm-hmm.
But my question for you, you keep mentioning, you know, when you saw this as a kid.
Yeah.
And we've kind of talked about this before of relating to movies at certain times in our lives. Did you relate to or see things through Damien's eyes more when you first saw this as a kid? I mean, obviously very different, but
did I relate to the Antichrist? No, I can't say that I did, but I was really scared because I would have been a little bit older, because my sister, her memory of watching this movie and why she was so scared of it was because it was the year she made her first communion. So I think that like which means she was in second grade, which is just what was going on in her house with the TV growing up. I don't know, with this movie and Carrie, but I think it was so scary for me, or my perspective was the way that it was, because I was in Catholic school at the time.
Okay.
And so I was around all of that imagery a lot, like going to church with my class during the school day, or just, you know, seeing a crucifix or saints, or, you know, any kind of imagery like that that we see in these devil movies. Like, it was not great because I was like pretty good about like not talking about these movies in school, though.
Well, you probably would have gotten transferred had you. Yeah.
I would have gotten in trouble. Probably they would have been scared.
Well, yeah, it's not that, you know, you would relate to Damien and his evilness, but it's interesting now being older and, you know, women's rights being such a big part of this election, but this movie too. And, you know, there are lines like the doctor saying you must agree to an abortion, and how the wife tells Robert that she's pregnant. It's not that. She goes, I want to have an abortion. I'm pregnant. And it's like, just
it's
a
like
little
flipped. It's,
right. But it's, you know, us, I think, at this age, maybe understanding better than if we were kids watching this, those aspects and how they deal with that, which is also messed up. You know, we talked about the birth scene in the beginning and how we learn later they killed the baby. Just wild.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I think if you look at what was happening politically in the late 60s into the 70s with women's lib and, you know, women, I think, speaking more freely and openly about their rights attached to their bodies and about pregnancy and abortion, I think that's also happening now. And if you look at a lot of the horror movies that have come out this year or recently, a lot of them deal with childbirth as something to fear, actually. And horror, like we've said before, I mean, you look at The First Omen, that's a great example. You look at Immaculate, that's a great example. Like, those movies, I think The First Omen I liked more than Immaculate, but you can go down the list of recent horror movies and see, okay, motherhood is a theme, childbirth is a theme, you know, having someone else make decisions around your body is a theme. And that, I think, is because of what we're going through right now politically. So first, to your first question, yes, I think, like, I think I understand that much more. And that's why the Thorne character is so scary to me and why I hate him so much, is because he made that decision for her and she didn't know. And look what situation they're stuck with now. But then also horror, really, it's the best genre to, I think, understand what's going on politically in any given moment, because directors have always used horror as a Trojan horse to bring in different themes that they wouldn't be able to in a drama or a comedy or even an action movie. So horror is always the place to go if you want to see modern anxieties come up.
Yeah, I think they do that perfectly of meshing all of these ideas, because there are a few and it's masked by this religious idea that, you know, the Antichrist is a child. So I think that's a bit ingenious in how they do that.
Yeah. And that part too, wrapping in Catholicism and one of the oldest, wealthiest religions that's very clear on how it feels about abortion. So that's another layer to it too that I think is interesting.
Did you have any other favorite scenes or shots from the rest of the movie? I know we kind of mentioned the finale, but I think the ending is shocking. I didn't know how that was going to go down. Him knowing what he had to do, take Damien into hallowed ground and then kill him, which would be wild. And the studio was worried at first, you know, having Gregory Peck be this actor who would kill a child in a movie.
I know.
So I was like, are they actually going to show it? And then that final gunshot just kind of takes you aback.
I think it's a really clever ending, because they don't show anything, but you still feel like you know how it ends. And then, you know, seeing the two caskets there with the funeral and taps playing, and then again that final look from Damien, it makes sense, I think, that this did spawn a franchise, because it does very much end on a cliffhanger. It's like, okay, he's still alive, like, he's gonna wreak havoc on another family who has him now. And he's associated with powerful families, which means that he can theoretically have an even greater impact, which is smart in setting up a franchise. I don't know how successful that actually was, but I like how it ends with that final look and that horrifying music playing. That's where we get the song again, too.
Yeah. It's interesting that during development, there was a version of this movie that was more ambiguous in that all of these things could have just been happenstance and not been caused by Damien or the Antichrist. And eventually they were like, no, it has to be this way where it's definitely being caused by him. And I definitely like that version more than the ambiguity. But yeah, it's ending on, okay, Mr. President, like what now? And Damien is with the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Like what? And it's just the power that he now has. And, you know, the prophecy is fulfilled in a way. It's so scary. But yeah, that smile to me at the very end is a perfect ending.
Do you think that anything was snubbed? So we got our two nominations. Would you nominate anything or anyone else?
Absolutely. Cinematography. Like, what are they doing? This is, to me, some of the best horror cinematography I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And it's just nonchalant. Like, they went all out and it looks incredible. The nominees that year, well, Bound for Glory 1, and then we have King Kong, Logan's Run, Network, and A Star is Born. So a big mix of movies there. And I think we could have made room maybe with King Kong or Logan's Run.
Weird cinematography nominations. Actually, really bizarre, especially if you consider that that was the year that Gordon Willis shot All the President's Men, which absolutely should have been nominated. What are we doing? Yep. Michael Chapman's work in Taxi Driver. Incredible.
Wow.
So, yeah. But I agree with you, definitely, for cinematography. I love, love the work here. I think it's, you know, if we think about great cinematography in horror movies, this needs to be on the list. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Do you think Mrs. Baylock or Billy Whitelaw should have been nominated for supporting actress?
Honestly, I think that would have been really fun. I don't know how I'd make room for her, though, because we have Beatrice Straight winning for Network. We have Jane Alexander for All the President's Men, who I love in that movie. Piper Laurie and Carrie, my personal winner, who, I mean, I think if we just had to make room for one, I don't know why we need to make room for just one horror movie actress, but if I had to give preference, obviously I'm going with Piper Laurie in the scary role.
Yeah.
And then I'm never going to take anything away from Lee Grant, obviously. And then Jodie Foster and Taxi Driver. So it's a fun collection.
Do you have other categories that you think are snubbed?
It's really just cinematography. And then I love the two music nominations that we did end up getting.
And then how do you think today's Academy would receive this movie?
I don't think it would really get anything today. I don't think they're very creative with score or song, especially. Like, they really do turn their nose up to horror. And this is pretty straight horror, right? It's not something like Get Out. It did do really well at the box office, The Omen, but it, you know, wasn't, I think, a cultural phenomenon in a way that horror movies, I think, kind of have to be now to be recognized at the Oscars in big ways. But then also, I can't think of an original song quite like this one. This might be the most unique song we've ever had. Now it's just like, I don't know, whatever hopeful anthem we get at the end of a movie.
Or Disney song.
Right, right.
No, yeah.
I wrote in my Letterboxd review that Diane Warren should write a satanic verse. See how it works. Then we can get one back at the Oscars.
Yeah, maybe that's how we revive this genre, I would say, of nomination. I agree. I love the Goldsmith score. I think it's phenomenal. It's scary, but it's eloquent at times. I think because it was a success, maybe that's why it got nominated. It is in very strange categories, though. You wouldn't, I don't know, think of I guess, a horror movie as like a technical movie.
Yeah.
Because the visual effects are, I would say, fine. They're not like crazy in this movie, but things I think are subdued so that mm-hmm. you feel some of that other horror happening.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think two nominations and a win really is its best case scenario.
I think so too. And if you could give this movie one Oscar, what would it be?
I think it's easy to say. It's for cinematography, for Gil Taylor. He was never nominated. He was nominated for two BAFTAs, but he also did the cinematography for Dr. Strangelove and Repulsion, which I think
I love.
Is just amazing camera work. I think that works well here too. And then Hitchcock's Frenzy. So he worked on so many great films, and he definitely deserved a nomination, if not for this, which I think, again, has some of the best cinematography from a horror movie that other horror movies try to emulate too. What would your one Oscar be?
Mine would actually be the one that ended up winning. I would go original score for Jerry Goldsmith. I love this score. I think it's perfectly deployed. It's so scary. I love the light notes. And also, I think those darker, heavier moments that we get from the score. And I think it's just such a cool winner. And it would be my winner too.
Well, maybe we'll have to cover the sequels on After Dark or do something with some of those. It gives me also like the Exorcist sequel vibes and Psycho 2, like some of those weirder mm-hmm. sequels that people really don't talk about much. So that could be fun. It was funny also reading that William Holden initially said no to being the Thorne character, but then he's in Damien, the Omen 2, playing the brother. So it's okay. But regardless, I think this is a fun entry looking back at the 70s once again and a good way to start off spooky season. Thank you all for listening. Feel free to rate, review, and follow on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Oscar Wilde Pod. We have bonus content on our Patreon at patreon.com/OscarWilde. And you can check our website, oscarwilde.squarespace.com, for updated nomination predictions.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.